All right, I am going to continue with Margie Weiner. The date is still August 8th, and this is take two, side two. Now, if you will continue talking about the Dollar Energy Fund. Before the tape so rudely interrupted my train of thought, the Dollar Energy Fund, in conclusion, is really a fine, fine project for the city of Pittsburgh and for those who cannot meet their utility bills during the bad times in the winter. And as I said, it was a brainchild of two of our National Council of Jewish Women Call for Action gals.
Who were the two of them?
Betty Ann Simon and myself.
Oh, okay.
And Betty Ann Simon is the one who is still chairing the whole project.
Right.
It was her baby. After the Urban Affairs Foundation Committee accepted it as a project, then Betty Ann just took full hold and devoted her whole energies to this Dollar Energy Fund, for which she should be highly commended. Call for Action is an ongoing consumer advocacy project that I am quite wrapped up in, and very thankful that KDKA Radio feels that it's a good enough project to continually subsidize and finance, because we are a nonprofit organization. They supply us with our area space in Number One Gateway Center. They supply us with the 10 telephones. One of the other things that originated here in Pittsburgh Call for Action is the monthly Ask the Attorney Night, where the first Tuesday of every month, or second Tuesday of every month, excuse me, we have volunteers from the Allegheny County Bar Association who come in and man or woman the phones, and free legal advice is given to anybody that calls in to Call for Action on that second Tuesday. We have all kinds of expert nights. We have affiliations with all the social agencies in town. We have affiliations with the government agencies in town, the social security agencies, the health plans, Blue Shield and Blue Cross, consumer problems with master charge charges. It was very interesting, if you want one case or not, that I can recall.
Sure.
Very well. I had a call one day from a gentleman who lived in the North Hills who had been moonlighting at the North Hills post office during the Christmas holiday mail season, and he was injured on the job. But when he called me, I just so happened that I answered the phone on this one call, he had had an accident, and this was 7 years ago. And his attorney had been his attorney had given up on the case because he could get nothing from his workman's compensation from the United States government. I talked to his attorney because, as our policy is, we do not enter a case if there has been an attorney on the case. The attorney said he had thrown the case out, that he could do nothing, he could not get through the red tape with the Labor Relations Board, either here, Philadelphia, or Washington. To make a long story short, I got hold of, I found out where the man lived, and I said, "Who is your congressman?" He didn't even know who his congressman was. After all, these are people that we elect,
mm-hmm.
and they're supposed to help their constituents.
Right.
His congressman was Doug Walgren, who happens to be a personal friend of mine. I called Doug Walgren and talked to John Delano, who was his administrative aide, told him what the story was, and he says, "Doug would love to work on this case. Send him in, we'll set up an appointment." I called the man back, I got all of the papers from the attorney who relinquished the whole case, sent me piles of letters, made an appointment with Doug Walgren. He had heard nothing from either United States Senator Hines or Specter at any time. Doug Walgren started to work on the case, and I kept in touch with them. And within 6 weeks, he had $30,000 in unemployment compensation, workman's compensation paid to him. plus retroactive money from the 7 years that he had been fighting this case in the appeals court. That's a success story.
Yes.
This is
great.
The kind of things that we do.
That's
you
great.
Have to know who to go to and
sure.
who to approach and how to get a problem solved.
I think
well,
that's wonderful.
Enough of call for action.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's wonderful. We're going to, sorry to jump around like this, but
mm-hmm.
we're going to go back just a little bit. If you could just tell me anything that you can remember being involved in as far as either the World War II, Vietnam War,
well,
just different things that you might
remember.
As I
said, I worked in Washington, D.C. during World War II, and that was the most exciting time. Washington was the place to be in the 40s. And you felt that you were right in the middle of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Klucznik was the director of the National Housing Agency at that time. He later became international president, I think, of B'nai B'rith or something like that. So I did not run into any anti-Semitism in my agency. There were people that did. The thing that I remember so vividly was one day when I was at the U.S. Senate in the gallery, because there was some housing legislation coming up that I had to cover to write up for the newspaper. And, of course, Harry Truman, as Vice President of the United States, was sitting as the Senate chair. And somebody had written in the Washington Post the day before about the lack of attendance of the senators on the floor during this important time of the war period. But Harry Truman got all A's because he never missed a day in the Senate session. The day I was sitting there, one of the other senators, or three senators it was, that's right, walked up to his podium desk and handed him three great big apples because he was such a good boy. And 2 days later, he was President of the United States. I also remember that fateful evening. It was a tradition to stop at the Mayflower Bar after work and have a drink before going home. One of our closest friends was a reporter for the Associated Press for the Pittsburgh newspapers. He lived in Washington, D.C. And we were waiting for him to meet us for a drink, and there was this strange, strange hubbub in the Mayflower lobby and around the bar. It was a buzzing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a telephone call, a message. Charlie says, "I'll be a little late. There's a story on the wire that President Roosevelt suffered a stroke, but we can't leave the desk right now." So we stayed there for another hour or so, and sure enough, the word came down and through the Mayflower Hotel lobby and through the bar that President Roosevelt had died.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the whole, I still get emotional when I think about it, because you felt that this was the end of an era, and in truth it was. It was the end of an era. I had campaigned for President Roosevelt in 1940. I rode a sound truck through Homestead when I was a freshman at Pitt. And he was really the only president that I was aware of as a child. And I was 9 years old when he was first elected. So it was an end of an era to be in Washington at the time of the funeral was a time that I will never forget.
You were right in the middle.
Highly
of
charged
everything.
Emotional. People just looked at each other. Cab drivers were crying. People walking on the streets. It was a universal, personal loss when Franklin Roosevelt died.
I know. I felt the same way.
And, of course, there were still these feelings of regret that he had not done more to lift the immigration laws for the European Jews who were trying to leave Europe and get into the United States. But for his social changes in this country, we should be forever grateful for that. Then the war was over. I was in Washington when Hiroshima was bombed, and it was also with mixed feelings that I experienced that. VJ Day and VE Day in Washington were, I think, the world's greatest parades and celebrations. Mm-hmm. It was highly charged times in Washington. The Vietnam War was to me the worst tragedy that ever the United States was in my lifetime or in my parents' lifetime. The slaughter of, senseless slaughter of young American boys was, to me, had no rhyme or reason. And I think from that time on is what has cost the United States government in everything. The money, the material, the lives that were poured into an area that we had no reason, no worthwhile reason to be involved in. And all you could see every time you sat down at the dinner table and that the television was on, the body count today.
Yeah.
The body count today. That's what you ate your meals with during the Vietnam War. And that's why I felt compelled to state my stand and march against it.
Oh, you did march against it?
Of course I did.
Where?
In Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And in Pittsburgh. There were candlelight marches. I remember one straight through the university, Carnegie Mellon campus. That was in probably 67 or 68 that I marched in then. The Korean War, I could not get involved in. I felt the same way about that. But it's dim in my memory. The Second World War and the Vietnam War, I remember better. You know, as you get older,
sure,
you can remember things from when you were a child, but you don't know what you had for lunch the day before.
That's right.
Or breakfast that morning. So those were things that I guess maybe I just did push the Korean War into the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, became quite involved with the cause of Soviet Jewry in the 70s.
That's
for which I marched.
Russia.
No, long before I went to Russia. I only went to Russia 2 years ago.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
But I'm talking about 1973, 74 and 75,
mm-hmm,
when I remember Rabbi Elliot Holin and I were the only ones from Pittsburgh who got on a plane in the morning, took our signs, and marched in that 600,000 person demonstration at the United Nations Square. And we took a plane that night and came home. But we did it because we had to do it. We couldn't not be there to express ourselves for Soviet Jewry. And of course, our concern has been through the years, culminating in our trip in 1987 to Russia. And I think I went through that on the other side of
you
the
did.
Tape about
yes.
our refusenik families.
Mm-hmm. You did. We were talking about the Vietnam War and so forth. The civil rights movement, were you involved in that in any way?
Well, in that I was a part of the Black Jewish Dialogue under the sponsorship of the United Jewish Federation a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in registering black voters, handing out cards and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I was a supporter of CORE, C-O-R-E. I was a supporter of the NAACP. Civil rights, I think, is universal, whether it be Jew or black, male or female.
Right.
You have your right to live your life as a human without discrimination and without segregation and without without rights.
Well, Margie, you have been extremely interesting. Is there anything that you can think of that might be interesting as far as our oral history project that we didn't cover? You're so interesting to talk to.
I really don't think that I'm that much different than any other aware, interested, compassionate, sympathetic woman in the city of Pittsburgh. If you have children, if you don't have children. I think that it comes from the fact that you always, our parents wanted something better for us than they had. And we wanted something better for our children than we had. And it just goes from generation to generation. And as long as you have that tradition and you have that interest in human beings, you can't not be interesting. It's a funny thing. You have your parents that you gained in education from, but you see, our generation, we were always caught in the middle. We had our parents to think of and to take care of. We had our children to think of and take care of. And many's the time I said, when does it ever get to be our turn?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that time comes too quickly when you no longer have your parents or your grandparents.
Right.
The whole sociological times have changed. I think my generation grew up in a household where there were at least three generations. So many of us had a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle living with the same family, with the parents and with the children. And as I said earlier, at one point on Hobart Street, I grew up in a family with four generations. My grandfather, my mother and father, and my niece, who had come home to live with her mother. So there were four generations, and it was a family group.
It's altogether different than it is today.
Completely different today. Completely different today.
I know.
But I don't think that your mind and your heart should be different today than it was two generations ago. You are what you are, what you think, what you feel. And I have never been afraid to express my thoughts and my feelings. And as I say, sometimes I become too vocal and I express myself too much. And then my dear Phil says to me, "Don't you know that God gave us two ears and one mouth? And that was for a reason. You should listen twice as much as you talk." And unfortunately, there are many times when I don't. You know,
it's
if you have a speech, you give it.
That's right.
And that's about all I can say right now.
On a personal level, your husband's occupation?
He's in the jewelry business. He has Goldstock Jewelers in the Clark Building, wholesale and retail, fine jewelry. Never failed to give a plug.
Sure.
And he is the same age as I am. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I mentioned this, but we grew up together on the same street, on Hobart Street. We knew each other when we were 5 years old.
Yes. Yes.
And after going our own lives and raising our families and losing our respective spouses, We found each other, mm-hmm. again.
That's nice. That's wonderful.
And also on a personal level, you're obviously very active and involved mm-hmm. in many things, but mm-hmm. what do you do for pleasure?
For pleasure.
Play sport.
I love to play
bridge,
golf.
You're a
Don't
golfer.
You see all the trophies yeah. up there? Mm-hmm. Both Phil and I mm-hmm. are avid golfers.
Mm-hmm.
We are not bridge players. Our social lives are centered around interesting people and not bridge clubs or anything like that. And, of course, we winter in Arizona, where we spend quite a bit of time. Phil is not retired, but he only works 3 or 4 days a week. And, of course, going away. We're going to take a trip in 2 weeks. We're leaving for Europe because he has never been back to the area where he was during the Second World War.
Where is that?
In France and the German border.
Hmm.
And he has relatives in France that we're going to visit also.
That's interesting.
So we love to travel. We like mm-hmm. to play golf. We like to be with each other. He loves his gardening. Our lives center around our children and grandchildren. Thank goodness they're not all here because, you know, we don't have to have them every day.
Right.
But it's a good life, and I'm very sad. I'm not smug. But I'm satisfied that I have lived my life the way I've wanted to and done interesting things, as you said. I've been around, and
that's wonderful,
it.
And we appreciate it very,
okay.
very much.
And you're very welcome.